So yeah, as Pete said, for those of you that I haven't met before, my name is Jo and I'm married to John, my trusty assistant, and Stan Shortener. We've been in London and part of KXC for the last 5 years or so. And I'll come on to me in a minute, but for those of you that know John, you'll know that he's a self-confessed fad person. So when we moved to London 5 years ago, it was the summer of 2012, it was the London Olympics, and it was actually a bit like today. Everyone was cheery because it was great weather. It was like a party atmosphere on the tube. It was brilliant, a bit like a summer bank holiday. But one of the excitements and successes of that year was how well Britain did in the cycling. And it was funny, after that Olympics, the number of people that I saw on road bikes and more surprisingly wearing Lycra seemed to skyrocket. I was really surprised by the amount of Lycra I started seeing. Anyway, now John, being a fad person, was quick to jump on the cycling phase. So he joined the Cycling to Work scheme, got a new bike, got kitted up with the padded shorts, very important. He got himself a rucksack with a shirt carrying function so he could cycle to work and then get dressed up. He got all the high-vis ready, but thankfully didn't go quite as far as a Lycra, which is a good thing. Oh, John, sorry. Well, it went well for a little while. He was cycling to work, but then, as you can imagine, the evenings start getting darker. The weather gets a bit cold, it gets a bit wet, and the cycling fad begins to wane. And the bike turns into more of a hanging rack for items in our hallway rather than a mode of transport. Now, a more recent example of one of John's fads is, some of you might have remembered this one, when we thought about getting chickens as pets in London. And John did all the research. He got really excited about the idea of having chickens. He looked at what type of hens we should get, where we would get them from, how much they would cost, and started researching what are the best hen houses to have in London for keeping chickens. He even went to a local city farm to take a look at the chickens that they had there. And he got as far as putting in a couple of offers on some chicken coops on eBay. But thankfully, we didn't win any, and that's as far as the chicken fad got. Now, John is really excited and throws everything behind something really quickly. I am a little bit of the opposite. Now, there's a graph going to come up which talks about the adoption of new technologies, but I think it can apply to other things as well, where John would fit into probably the early adopters section of new technologies. I would probably fit into the laggards category at the end. I'm a bit of a slow adopter of things, where John kind of gets really excited and throws everything behind something straight away. I am very slow to commit. So I was a very late adopter of the smartphone, and I only caved because John was so frustrated about how bad my phone was that he set up one of his old hand-me-downs for me. But it's not just with technology, again, for me. It's with all sorts of things, with fashion, with trends. Even when I'm in the supermarket, it takes me ages to decide to commit to what cereal I want to buy. Is it Weetabix? Is it Special K? I just don't know. It just takes me so long to commit. And I've been thinking about this, like, because I think I probably think through too many of the variables involved, and I'll only end up committing to something if it's what I know I really want to do. And I've been wondering, do I have a bit of a fear of committing to things? And for John, with some of these fads, he's all in really quickly in committing to the cycling, but sometimes when the weather changes, when it starts to rain, the commitment begins to fade. But these are all, it's a little bit of a joke. I mean, the cycling and the chickens actually nearly happened, but it's a bit in jest. But it's something that I see around us. Lots of us have different battles with commitment. Even as I was thinking about what to talk on today, this idea of faithfulness and commitment had been in my mind for a while. And I'd been wrestling with it for like 3 weeks, thinking, oh, I'm not going to talk on that, which is just ironic given given the topic. And so I thought, oh, no, I have to do it now. So that's what I thought we'd have a little look at today, to have a look to see what the Bible says about commitment. So when the Bible talks about commitment, it often uses this word faithfulness, which gives this idea of steadfastness of persistence, to remain, but to remain in all circumstances, even when it's raining. And as I'm sure you're probably aware, there are so many examples in the Bible that we could pick out today to think about examples of commitment and examples of faithfulness. But we're only going to look at one today, which is good news, otherwise we'd be here all day. And that's going to be Hosea. So Hosea was a prophet in the Old Testament of the Bible. And a prophet was someone who communicated God's message to the world and communicated God's message to his people. Now, often that was through words and through language, but in Hosea's case, he also communicated God's message through his actions in a symbolic way as well. So Hosea was talking to the nation of Israel when he was around, and at that time, Israel was neighbours with the Assyrian Empire. And they had a bit of a love-hate relationship with them at that time. There was a lot of political instability going on. And at times, they were kind of paying the Assyrian Empire to protect them and submit to them. And at other times, they were kind of rebelling against this empire. And at that same time, the Israelites were also kind of embracing other cultures and got involved in worshipping these other gods of these other cultures as well. So that's the context that Hosea was speaking into. So we're going to jump straight in with Hosea chapter 1, and it's going to come up on the screen so you can follow along there. It says, "When the Lord began to speak through Hosea, the Lord said to him, 'Go, marry a promiscuous woman and have children with her. For like an adulterous wife, this land is guilty of unfaithfulness to the Lord.' So he married Gomer, daughter of Diblaim, and she conceived and bore him a son." So Hosea hears the Lord speak, and he tells Hosea to go and marry a promiscuous woman. And the commentaries suggest that this is probably a prostitute. And so he obeys God. He goes and finds Gomer, he marries her, and then has three children with her. And the third child, we are told, is called Lo-Ammi, which we're told means "not my people." And this was kind of a prophecy speaking into Israel about how they had turned their back on God. And it was almost as if God was saying, it's like you're not even my people anymore because you've turned away from me. But it also makes you wonder if Hosea's called his third child something that means "not my people," whether there was some question as to whether he was indeed the father. So we carry on the story a little bit later in chapter 3. And by this point, we assume that at some point, Gomer has left Hosea. And so we'll carry on reading, picking up on chapter 3. It says, "The Lord said to me, 'Go, show your love to your wife again, though she is loved by another man and is an adulteress. Love her as the Lord loves the Israelites, though they turn to other gods and love the sacred raisin cakes.'" I'm just going to pause here because I can't pass that line without a little chuckle to myself about the raisin cakes, because I too love a cake with a raisin in. Welsh cakes, toasted tea cakes, fruit cake, the list is endless. Anyway, I was a little bit worried because I do like these cakes, but apparently, I read into it, they were used as a form of worship to this fertility god that was around at the time. So we're okay eating our raisin cakes today. It was just an example that Hosea was using of how they were worshipping these other gods. I digress. Let's carry on. "So I bought her for 15 shekels of silver and about a homer and a lethek of barley. Then I told her, 'You are to live with me for many days. You must not be a prostitute or be intimate with any man, and I'll behave the same way towards you.'" I'm just going to pause for a minute because I don't know about you, but often when I read some of these passages from the Bible, I just kind of let them wash over me. And sometimes I just like to sit and think about it for a little while. What's going on here? So God has asked this man, Hosea, this man of God, this prophet, to marry a prostitute. More than that, once he's done that, she then leaves him. And God says to him again, "Go and find her again. Go and bring her home." And the amount that he pays for her, we can read in verse 2 here, was about the same amount as a slave in that time. So you can maybe wonder, was she working in a brothel at the time? And Hosea hears the Lord, and again, he obeys. He goes, trying to find his wife Gomer, finding him in a brothel, apparently forgotten all about him. He pays for her, brings her home again. And more than that, God asks him to love her again. He says, love her as the Lord loves the Israelites, though they turn to other gods. I think it's an amazing image of God's love, of how God loves the Israelites, even though they turn to other gods. How Hosea loves Gomer, even though she's been turning to other men and has been unfaithful to him. God's love here is extravagant. It's offensive, almost, how much he loves us. That even when we've abandoned him, even when we've turned away and taken our love and our worship elsewhere, he remains faithful. He remains in all circumstances. And that is true faithfulness. Tim Keller writes this: when Jesus looked down from the cross, he didn't think, I am giving myself to you because you are so attractive to me. No, he was in agony, and he looked down at us, denying him, abandoning him, and betraying him. And in the greatest act of love in history, he stayed. He said, Father, forgive them. They don't know what they are doing. He loved us, not because we were lovely to him, but to make us lovely. And that is true faithfulness. Someone who gives their own son to die for us. Not because we were lovely to him, but to make us lovely. He remains waiting for us, loving us, no matter what we've done. And as I was preparing this talk today, I just felt like no matter what I go on to say next, for some of you, that's just what you need to hear today. That God is faithful, that he is still here, that he still loves you. No matter what has gone before, no matter what is going on, just a reminder that he is faithful and he is with you. But we'll create some space at the end to pray into that if that is something that you really feel hits home for you. But one of the frameworks that we use here at KXC quite often is that God's being leads to God's doing, which leads to our being, which leads to our doing. So who God is determines what he does. And that speaks into who we are and therefore what we do as a result of that. And we've already kind of looked at the first two parts of this today. We've seen that God is faithful. He is faithfulness. He therefore loves us extravagantly and is faithful to us abundantly. But if we are followers of him, we are called to let that influence who we are and what we do. We're called to embody that faithfulness to the people in the world around us. And I don't know about you, but that seems like a bit of a big challenge to me. What I alluded to earlier was that I sometimes struggle to commit to things. So if we rewind back to 2012, just before we moved to London, John and I got married. And about a month before the wedding day, I had this moment where my head had been in all of the details of the wedding. We'd been packing up, thinking about moving to London. What job was I going to get? Where was I going to move? And it suddenly hit me in that month before that this marriage thing is for life. I'm not quite sure why it took me so long to figure that out. I think I was probably busy in the ins and outs of work and all these other things. But it just suddenly hit me in that moment. And if I'm honest, I suddenly began to panic a little bit, which is not what your fiancé wants to hear a month before the wedding. As much as I really, really loved John, I was really worried about, is this going to work? Am I going to have the capacity to commit to this for life? It seems like a really daunting thing. And I remember having these conversations with John in the car as he was dropping me home in the evenings, asking these questions of, are we too similar? Are we too different? Is it even going to work between us? And where God's nature is faithfulness, where he is unbelievably faithful to us, we are human and we do fall short of that. But we can choose faithfulness. We can choose to remain. And I remember in that moment, in that dilemma I was having, in that panic, I had this conversation with a friend, and I was asking her, what do I do? Is this going to work? Is this possible? And I remember she asked me this question. She said, Joe, do you want to commit to make it work with John? And I think in that moment, my perspective shifted. Our love and our marriage and our relationship isn't something that just happens. It's not something that I commit to once and then passively sit by and wait to see if it works or not. It's something that I'm active in, that I choose to commit to daily, that I choose to love, that I choose to be faithful, even when it's tough. Our marriage vows says, my mind's gone blank. What was our marriage vows? In sickness and in health, like even in those tough times, even when one of you is really sick, I choose to love. And it's not just in relationships that we can choose faithfulness. We can be faithful in the way we pray. We can be faithful in praying for something or someone over time. We can be faithful in our workplace, committing to it. We can be faithful in the way that we serve various projects or at KXC. We can be faithful in our community, choosing to remain. Choosing to remain in these things, even in the rain. And that is a challenge. It seems like a big challenge to me. But what I'm encouraged by is when the Bible talks about faithfulness, is that it talks about faithfulness as something we can grow in. So Galatians 5 talks about the fruit of the Spirit. And it lists faithfulness as one of these fruits. So it's something that we can grow in over time if we're walking with God. Now, in our garden, we've got two fruit trees. And I think they are the best plants to have, because although I am a terrible gardener and I have no gardening knowledge, each and every year we somehow get this lovely crop of plums and apples. And the fruit just does its thing. I don't have to do anything. It just kind of happens and arrives and it grows. And it's a little bit like that with the fruit of the Spirit. When we're walking in step with God, when we're allowing ourselves to be influenced by Him, faithfulness will grow in us. That faithfulness, that true faithfulness that He is and He carries will come and will grow in us. And it's something that Hosea talks about again, right at the end of the book. In chapter 14, it says, "O Israel, stay away from idols. I am the one who answers your prayers and cares for you. I am like a tree that is always green. All your fruit comes from me." So if we remain in God, knowing who He is, knowing the one that is truly faithful, then through His Spirit, that faithfulness will also grow in us as well. Now, for 3 days a week, I have the privilege of working with older people in the Camden area across the whole borough. And it's a real privilege because I get to chat with people who've lived in London for 70, 80, 90 years even. And it's really interesting to hear their stories about the city, about the way it's changed, about what they've seen happen over those decades. And it's really interesting hearing them talk about the Caledonian Road and the King's Cross area, because they often talk about it in a really dodgy way, like it's a really dodgy area. And going back a few decades, in the 80s and 90s, King's Cross was well known to be a little bit of a dodgy, a little bit of a seedy area. I think now with a lot of the investment that's gone in, it looks a little bit nicer and it seems a bit much of a nicer place to be. But I think some of those issues are still there. I think they're probably maybe just a little bit more hidden. People struggling to connect with that community. People still feeling quite vulnerable around here, but maybe it's just a lot more hidden than it used to be. Well, many in the room and many at KXC will know of a lady called Sister Kay. She's an amazing woman who has spent decades of her life getting to know some of the vulnerable women and the women at the edges of society in King's Cross, spending time to create space for them, get to know them. She's a nun who's dedicated her life to God, and she's dedicated her life to the women of the area, welcoming them into a safe space, going with them to appointments if they're in trouble, going and visiting them, and just loving them and being there for them. Her story is one of unbelievable faithfulness, faithfulness to God and faithfulness to the area. She has remained in all circumstances. She's remained for decades, coming and meeting the women in the area. She's remained kind of going out late at night, even to 2 a.m. at times in the past. She's now in her 70s, and she still comes to King's Cross each and every week, spends time getting to know the women in the area. And she keeps coming, even though other people have stopped. She seems to me like someone who is fueled by God's faithfulness, someone who knows him intimately, someone who, despite all the things that have happened and the tough environment that she's worked in for many years and doing it over decades and decades, I don't know how you could keep doing that unless you were tuned in to God's faithfulness. She seems like someone who knows him intimately, someone who has allowed faithfulness to grow in her own life, and someone who has chosen to be faithful to his calling. So I wonder today if there's something that God is calling us to be particularly faithful to. We live in a culture that is so transient. We change jobs faster than any other generation before us. We move home and location so fast that the idea of a landline phone is just absurd, because why would you change it after 9 months? We love freedom. We love flexibility. We love not being tied down to things. But it makes me wonder, are we fearful and anxious about committing to things? We might find ourselves wondering, oh, well, I might find a better job with better pay or a better work culture in a little while. Or I'm going to try living here for a bit, but if something that better comes up, I might move there instead. We always find ourselves comparing, looking at what the other options are around us, anxious to commit to things. But are we ever going to see a change in our work culture if we leave after a year? Are we ever going to get to know our neighbours, make friends, make a difference in our community if we're only there for a really short time? Are we ever going to go deep in our relationships if we never push past those difficult conversations where we might disagree with someone? Faithfulness and commitment costs. It might cost us financially to stay where we're living. It might cost us emotionally to have the difficult conversations with people. It might cost us in energy and time committing to serve our workplace or different projects. But if our area is going to fly, if we're going to see renewal here, if we're going to see God's kingdom come in this place, then we need to commit and be faithful to things, even in the rain. Sister Kay made a difference in the lives of those women because she remained through all circumstances, through decades, sacrificing so much to meet with those women, being faithful even when it was tough. So I wondered whether there's something that God's asking you to choose to be faithful to. It might be something new. It might be something that you've heard him speak about before, and he's asking you to commit to be faithful to again.